This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It is 16 minutes past 10. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred.
And we are here with Moira Rayner, who is a human rights activist, a lawyer, an advocate, and an all-round maven on the issues of democracy and individual rights and the rights of communities and ordinary people out there, as opposed to the sort of entrenched interests of the big end of town. So, Moira, I'd like to actually explore another issue with you in terms of what we were talking about before. But traditionally, the role of attorneys general in a democracy, in a parliamentary democracy like the Westminster system, has been as the first law officer, hasn't it? Isn't that the way that it's described?
Yes. We developed this tradition from England, and the attorney general was really somebody who didn't really have to be in Parliament even. It was somebody whose job it was to make sure that the independence of judges was protected by speaking up in their defence when they were criticised.
They defended judges.
Yeah, very much. And they were responsible for making sure that judges were appointed properly and on proper terms and for life, so that they didn't have to feel they had to satisfy the executive side of government.
And that the judges that were appointed were cognizant of the issues that they would face when they were sitting on the bench, because there are many issues that have arisen in the past 50-odd years around rights, like issues around domestic violence and children's rights and so on, and our emerging issues of LGBTI rights. And so we really need to have someone, don't we, whose job it is to say to judges, you need to be aware of this and we will protect you in the exercise of your judgment, because that's what they're doing. Yeah.
We should be appointing judges who understand the deepest principles of the common law. And the deepest principles of common law, because we've only got a partially written constitution, actually, are written into it, so to speak, in letters of gold.
By things like the Magna Carta.
By things like the traditional constitutional documents which led to the writing of the Australian Constitution. And that's why we need to appoint damn good judges who understand that the common law depends on the protection of the freedoms of individuals.
So why don't we have a Bill of Rights?
Because only the original Bill of Rights started in and got a bad name from the French Revolution, which protected the freedom, equality and fraternity principles of the French Revolution, which went so catastrophically wrong not that long afterwards. Then the United States, which wasn't the United States, then the Americas, the North America, decided to have a Bill of Rights subsequent to its constitution, which is based on the idea of liberty of the person and of conscience and certain fundamental freedoms. But we don't have a written constitution because the makers, a written Bill of Rights or constitutionally entrenched rights, because the makers of the constitution in the United Kingdom and the Australian colonies actually thought common law traditions would be enough. And to their credit, many judges over decades have in fact found common law rights implied or explicit in the constitution, but they weren't written out there as fundamental things.
But it is fair to say that judges like Lionel Murphy and Michael Kirby and people like that actually expanded the common law to bring in the English-speaking common law, so that judgments that are made in the United States, for instance, often are used in judgments in Australia.
That's been happening for 30-odd years. It started happening when I was studying law a very long time ago.
It's not that long ago.
It was very long ago. Yeah. I'm an old, very wise woman now. But the idea of an international jurisprudence was a bit wonky. It depended initially on whether you were part of the English-speaking traditions of the colonies and so forth. But it has gradually expanded to the point where, because we have international laws and norms, we can share other countries' traditions. And England, for example, has now adopted a system of laws which recognise not only the common law of England, but also the commonalities of statute law in the European
European Union these
European
days.
Union these
but
days.
But I've also seen, in things that I've read, I've also seen judgments from people in South Africa, from Kenya, Uganda, and people like that being referred to in judgments.
They have been since the 1950s, because they shared the same appeal court to begin with. But now they're brought in because there is this concept of international jurisprudence.
And also they have the same tradition of lawmaking.
Very much, at least in principle. They've all got their own little local versions. The Australian version of democracy, may I say, as one who was born and educated in New Zealand, is very different from the New Zealand one, as a matter of fact, and we are yet so close.
You have that weird way of voting over there. You can agree with us or disagree with us, listeners, by onair@joy.org.au. Email us on that, or SMS us on 0427 joy 949, or ring Robert on the front desk on 1300 joy 949. And we are talking with Moira Rayner, human rights activist and lawyer.
So we were talking a bit before about Gillian Triggs and I guess what she represents to the government as a threat rather than this checks and balances as we would like. And I suppose that's mostly come about through her speaking out about asylum seekers. So can you, I guess, debunk a few things? Firstly, is there a queue for asylum seekers, and how does that queue work?
No, there isn't a queue for asylum seekers. There's a United Nations network of places where people who are or believe they should be found to be refugees can go.
It's mostly people in danger.
Who have been persecuted because of something about their fundamental beliefs. But there is no right to be received as a refugee in any country. It's just a place where you might get lucky.
So why did this misconception, where did it arise from?
Well, basically bullshit in the media.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It's now 10:30 on the dot. We're here with Moira Rayner, human rights maven, talking about what's happening in our democracy at the moment.
And we found a quote over the break, which we like, which is by anti-Nazi advocate Martin Niemöller. He was German. And he said...
He was a Lutheran minister.
And we think this is relevant to our situation now. He says, "First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me."
So, Moira, during the week we saw an interesting thing that flew around the internet with Barnaby Joyce apparently asking in the cabinet, from the leaked cabinet discussion, why would we allow a minister to strip somebody of their citizenship? Isn't that what we've got courts for? And allegedly Peter Dutton, who's the Minister for Immigration, who's getting this power, said, "I wouldn't worry about it. It's just an administrative decision." Is it just an administrative decision?
No, it's one of the fundamental rights actually guaranteed by the Universal Declaration.
And the Magna Carta before that even.
That's right. But it's also divine law, as a matter of fact. You have a right to a name and an identity, which includes a nationality and a national origin. In the United States, you cannot be deprived of your citizenship. Other countries have other rules.
I mean, the UK does this, don't they, at the moment? They've had this law of depriving people of even their first citizenship, which is English citizenship.
They can do that, but the people there have a right to go to the courts over it. And this is one of the things that is deeply worrying about the current proposal, that a person who is presumed or thought to have been fighting for a foreign force, or, in other words, being apparently...
Or materially supporting a foreign...
Or materially supporting terrorists or whatever else, can be stripped of their citizenship by an administrative decision. Now, this is one of the things that is actually totally against the rule of law. Interestingly, this is just on the side, Dante, who wrote
The Inferno.
The Inferno and all the other bits of paradise, was stripped of his citizenship in Venice on the basis of the say-so of a minister, because there was no basic rule that you could not be stripped of your status and rights and entitlements and possessions unless there was evidence against you and a non-biased decision maker being made. You could actually be, and he was, stripped of his citizenship, never went back to Venice again, on the say-so of gossip, and that was actually recognised as a form of proof. Now, this is what's going on here. We're actually going back to something which was regarded as outrageous in Dante's time, because even in England they had requirements that you couldn't be stripped of entitlements or jailed or put to death without some sort of a process. But this process said gossip will do. Now, this is happening here. The very idea of it being done, and of Minister Dutton allegedly saying something to the effect of he didn't want courts second-guessing him, indicates to me that, one, you shouldn't allow unreconstructed former policemen to go into a position where they have such executive power and that they see nothing wrong in seeking a gross excess of it. And two, I actually don't think, but then I'm a radical, aren't I, that people who go into Parliament should do so without having a thorough education before they start in the rights and freedoms that underlie our representative
but
democracy.
Professor Triggs actually did say during the week, I think, I saw her reported as being, as saying anyway, might not be right, I might be misquoting her, but something to do with if anything proved that Minister Dutton shouldn't be given this right, it was his statement that it was an administrative decision only.
Well, exactly. He doesn't understand the idea of the separation.
He doesn't
of
understand
powers.
The rule of the law or the separation
or that,
of powers.
No.
So what happens to these people who become stateless? Where do they go?
Well, that's the point. Where can they go? For example, if somebody is supposedly dual national but they came from Iran, Iran won't take them back. So what are you going to do? Well, I suppose Manus Island will take a few million people if you put them on high-rise
towers. But then there's habeas corpus, isn't there?
Habeas corpus is only a common law principle enunciated by the courts to require the production of a person who is alleged to be detained unlawfully and to ascertain whether that person who is depriving them of their liberty has the right to do so, and that means they've got to be in a jurisdiction which recognises the person has that right. But if you give an administrative officer such as former Queensland policeman Dutton the power to detain on the basis of a person being apparently non-loyal or associating with terrorists or
materially supporting
them, then there is absolutely no way in which you can protect any other person. See, the link between what I am trying to make clear here and that quotation you had to open this little section should be made very, very clear. If you are able to take the right away the rights of a person to be in a country and have a nationality and the right to travel by a mere administrative decision, there is no reason why that shouldn't happen in any country at all, so that our citizens, when travelling, may find themselves, God help them, in Egypt exercising their powers as a journalist and being put through a trial over there, which may end up with their having no...
Happened
ever?
Already?
Oh, that's right, it did, didn't it?
That was Peter Gresta, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it was. Well, this is the point. Peter Gresta could have been deprived of his citizenship on a political decision by a cabinet here, and he would have had, if he tried to get out of the Egyptian jurisdiction, he couldn't have done it. He had nowhere to go. And some of his colleagues have had to stay there and go through this farce of a trial cannot go anywhere else either. Citizenship is such a fundamental liberty and human freedom.
And
it
can't
be taken away like this.
I don't think we're that far away from it in the gay and lesbian community either, because if a government decided that it didn't like gays and lesbians, it could just say, not recognising your rights anymore, bad luck.
Well, indeed, so this was kind of what used to happen, actually, Jim. I remember these days very well when a young academic could be thrown into the Torrens River in South Australia and allowed to drown, and nobody took any notice about it because he was gay.
That's right.
When did
Dr.
this happen?
George Duncan in 1970-something. I remember it well.
I remember it well, too.
And you, Aaron, is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It's 16 minutes to 11, and we're talking with Moira Rayner, human rights maven, here on Joy 94.9. Moira, in the we were just talking about the rule of law a minute ago, and whether or not the Minister for Immigration actually understood the rule of law. But isn't it more serious than that? Because according to some reports in the Saturday paper on the weekend, it's the Prime Minister that's been leading this this charge against the Human Rights Commission, the President of the Human Rights Commission. And there were, and there's been some talk that, that she's been given inducements to move from her position. Now, isn't that actually illegal to give inducements to officers of statutory officers of the Crown?
Yeah, yes, it is, as a matter of fact. And the only reason that matter having been referred to the Federal Police, the only reason it hasn't gone any further is because Gillian Triggs didn't want to make a complaint. She is one gutsy lady, you know. She has been the subject of vitriol and unjustified attacks for a very long time.
But couldn't any of us make a complaint? Or does it have to be her?
It has to be somebody making the complaint who can testify directly as to the facts on which these allegations are made. Now, she's made her public statements, but she doesn't want to make a complaint at this time. And I can understand why. She is saying that she has been subjected to ridicule, deliberate misconstruction of what she said, accusations of political partisanship in the timing of her inquiry into the detention of children offshore.
It shows that people didn't read the inquiry.
Well, they didn't read the report because she was equally attacked or attacking of the previous government's policies and procedures and detention. And she's been those allegations have been substantiated in her commission of inquiry and also by two or three other ones since. So it's quite clear that the bad things are happening. This is not the point. My point is that it seems that the very highest levels of ministers of the Crown have made it their business to try and turn public opinion against her because they don't have the power to dismiss her, because they don't like the fact that she's telling them the things they don't want to hear, including that the way in which children are being treated in immigration detention is absolutely unacceptable, and that some of the things that they're planning on doing, as in stripping citizenship, are contrary to the principles of the rule of law, and that her role is there to do exactly that and to make sure that Australia complies with its international legal obligations. That's why it was set up in 1986, and you will note the date. This is not a modern radical government new process set up by the baddies. It was set up by the Fraser government, and it was set up for very sound reasons, not just moral reasons, in fact for good sound reasons, for, based on comity of nations and freedom of trade and commerce and the building of secure national sovereign states and a common understanding about how we should treat one another as citizens.
But that was at a time when we had an anti-apartheid liberal, real liberal Prime Minister, isn't it?
He was no saint, you know.
Well, he was no left-winger, that was for
sure. He was certainly no left-winger, and I don't see left-winger as a critical remark, frankly. I think that's fine.
We see it as a badge of honour in here.
My major concern here is that she is being attacked for doing her job, and the way in which it is happening is disgraceful. It has been publicly admitted that it was made clear to her that if she chose to take up some other appointment, then they would allow her to go and breathe a sigh of relief. It has been very obvious that the other commissioners, and in particular, Tim Wilson, have been somewhat reluctant to speak up in her defence, even though they had a hand in the reports that she has written, all of which means that if she steps down, then that means that that little bulwark against absurd misuse of executive authority will be removed, and we're all exposed to what may then flow. And it is really important for ordinary people to understand it's all our rights we need to be very alert about. Overreach of executive stuff.
Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
So I just wanted to come to something that you alluded to earlier, which is something that's happened previously in your life when you've been treated in a similar way. Is that right? Can you talk to us a bit about that?
On a local level, when I was the Equal Opportunity Commissioner and the representative of the Human Rights Commission in Victoria in the early 1990s, I did two things that the new Kennett government didn't like in 1993. One was to conduct an inquiry, which I was obliged to do, into the treatment of women prisoners who were being detained in men's prisons. and another was to receive complaints against the effects, or the allegedly discriminatory effects of certain Kennett policies, such as the closing down of Northland Secondary College, which was the only college which was successfully integrating and educating Aboriginal students in the system. On the latter, I got very strong messages from the Premier that I should not receive complaints, and Gillian's commission is exactly the same. I should not receive complaints about the effects of government policies because it was government policy and therefore exempt. In fact, I did receive it and didn't dismiss it, and it went on to a public hearing, and that was found to be a discriminatory determination by the government because it meant that Aboriginal kids couldn't succeed in the education mm-hmm. system in Victoria. So, mind you, by that stage I'd been moved on. And similarly, the attempt, which was successful, to bring to public attention the effect of imprisoning women in men's prisons was that the women died. They couldn't survive in those prisons, and therefore it was a discriminatory decision. I didn't need to get the injunction. I just needed to bring to the public attention the fact that this was a discriminatory effect on women of trying to save money, even though that was a public intention, and it needed to be looked at by
this
court.
This was not even very long ago, was it, when you
No,
think
that
about
was,
it?
No, it was 1994. I think that, but the end result was the then Premier and all the ministers attacked me in my little local area. I'm a very small pond, in a very small pond compared with what Gillian's happening, but it was identical. You are telling us things we don't want to know. You are doing things in an autonomous way we don't want to hear. Therefore, we're going to get rid of you. And what they did in my case, she's not that vulnerable, is amend the Equal Opportunity Act to abolish the position. So that was it. They abolished the position and out I went. Now, there is still an office there, but one of the things they've done is take away the powers of the Commissioner for Equal Opportunity to conduct an investigation without the approval of a minister, and no powers at all to conduct an investigation
and
into individual complaints.
Is that still the case in Victoria?
I'm afraid it is.
So we've had a number of successor Labor governments since then, and they have not amended that. Even though they brought in the Human Rights Charter, they didn't fix that.
No, they didn't. But they do. See, there are various other things, and they think that's enough. And I'm saying to you, as a person who exercised that power and lost a job out of it and sort of had a funny career after it as a result, is that unless you're thoroughly committed to a human rights monitor of the sort that Gillian Triggs is the president of, and unless you give it at least the power to conduct its inquiries and investigations and write reports freely to the parliament and therefore to the people, then you're not really committed to a human rights
but
agency.
But if you sign up to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and so on, then you should have legislation that mirrors those statutes or those international
yes.
covenants, shouldn't you?
Yeah, one should, or at least have. All that's required in, for example, membership of the European Union is that you have a domestic human rights network that works for you. And there are certain norms set by their international, that is their own particular region's human rights instruments, and isn't that hunky-dory? I think it's great. But they also have a court to which a person can go when they say their human rights under those union statutes have been infringed, and they can make statements. Now, what we don't have is something similar for Australia. We have to rely on domestic courts. And from time to time, we get this wonderful revelation that the common law can do this by interpreting our local laws in accordance with Australia's international obligations.
But we can take things to the United Nations, can't we?
Yes, but they can't enforce it.
They can't enforce it, but we have taken things.
And we have, for example, in Tasmania, making sure that homosexuality was prohibited was actually by going to the United Nations and saying this was an outrageous abuse of the principle of equality before the law and privacy. You have to pick your arguments to suit the zeitgeist.
So I'm curious to about what happened in that experience in terms of change being made. Like, did the public back you? Like, I know, for example...
The public backed me.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so was that the critical thing in getting those things changed? Like, I know, for example, there's no longer women in men's prisons.
No, there's not. That argument was lost. And that's one of the reasons that they decided to get rid of me, because I was being very difficult.
So is the public backing Gillian Triggs?
Yes, I think they are. And I think this is why there's such a vicious attack on her, to try and ridicule her, make her look stupid, make her recommendations that a bloke had been detained illegally for 5 years, for example, should get compensation, and say, see, she's politically naive or she's biased and she's a stupid, fat old lady, which is what they did to me. And I'm not stupid, and I'm not fat, but I'm an old lady now. But I think that the public need to get fully behind Gillian Triggs. She is actually standing up for the institution.
Go, Gillian.
Everybody's rights.
We like her.
Yeah, good. Make sure you tell your local Member of Parliament and your Senator.
We do, don't worry.
Absolutely, yes.
We are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It is now
6 minutes to 11.
And we're right near the end of the show. Thank you, Steph, for being here. Thanks, Claire, for being on the panel. Thanks, James. And thank you to our guest, Moira Rayner. We'll have you back one day.
Oh.
That was too good fun.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.